हरि ओम सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 34, 4 Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Chapter 12, Further Aspects of Transcendental Service. Okay, where does it start? Over here. Okay, the fruit touched by the parrot's sweet mouth becomes additionally sweet. In the same way, the descriptions of the Lord touched by the mouth of the highly elevated devotees becomes even sweeter, right? Because then their realizations, their taste in the Lord's glories is added. Then how much more sweet the Bhagavatam will be when it emanates from the mouth of Sukadeva, the great king of all the greatest devotees, having attained the culmination of the highest state. Naturally, a person can have no satisfaction in anything else. Therefore, drink this, since this sweet fruit includes even the bliss of liberation within it. A means including, and laya means liberation. So alaya, right? You're just like you have. Okay. Later, Sukadeva will say, O saintly king, I was certainly situated perfectly in transcendence, liberation. Yet, I was still attracted by the delineation of the pastimes of the Lord, who is described by enlightened verses, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.19. By mentioning liberation, which is eternal and exhaustible, it is thus indicated that the taste intrinsic to the Bhagavatam will not diminish either with the passage of time or by an increase in the number of people who relish it. Right? Because if people are relishing it, you suck all the juice out, you know, like that. Like that. So, you know, you'll end up with those, you ever seen those? It's a plant kind of like, it's like a jinga, but it's a cousin or something. And they get it goes ripe, so it gets a lot of fiber inside. Then they dry it, take off the skin. Then they use it for scrubbing, like when you take bath and stuff. I think in the West they call them loofahs. Yeah, here they just grow wild on the trees and stuff.
I was still thinking it was jinga only.
Yeah, so did I. It's slightly different. It looks like jinga, but it's a little bit, like the shape's a little different. But it's basically, probably if you left the jinga, you'd get that also, if you let it go.
Also, Maharaj, here, to get out the juice, generally on this aspect where purely, what you can say, not philosophical, academic kind of thing. Once many people know, there is no Jews in it.
Yes, yes. There has to be somebody to know it. It's like gossip, right?
Yeah.
Once it becomes common knowledge, then who cares? Yeah. Yeah. But here it's that because it's connected with the Lord, it's unlimited. The juice gets more and more as it goes. Because your appreciation increases. Because the Lord's unlimited, so the amount of juice is unlimited. So depending upon your attraction, your development, you can appreciate more and more of this nectarian juice. Right? So it includes liberation, so it gives that aspect of the ultimate. Yes. Okay. Alternatively, there's another meaning of alayam. And this is Jiva Goswami. Okay. Thus, alayam can mean leading up to prema and including the stage of complete prema. Footnote 7. Laya can mean great attachment, and the sattvika bhava of fainting or pralaya, which arises from attachment in prema. Bhagavatam has topics leading up to prema, and topics which are prema, the pastimes of Krishna. So you see, the first 9 cantos are leading up to prema, right? Then the 10th canto is prema, right? And then the 11th canto is explaining those first cantos, but from that angle of jnana yoga, as Krishna says, so that you can, see that it can always be applied. Right? Does that make sense? Because karma, you have certain situations, you can apply it, not apply it. But when you have jnana, there's nothing that can bar its application. Right? Because it's being done according to an understanding of what's the principle behind what you're doing. Karma means you're taking, means of course you should take the principle, but you also can see the secondary aspect, and that according to what's available, then you engage it.
Yes.
So if you're engaged in karma, you see, okay, here's, you know, an opportunity for some activity that can be done for Krishna. So that's there. Jnana means you understand why you would do that activity, what it is you're going to be offering to Krishna. So that you see, and that you can appreciate at that point. Does that make sense? So then it's given that nectarian aspect is there in the middle then. Right? You have the opening, you have the closing, then you have the main thing in the middle.
So actually, then mostly all our approach will be like that only, because initially we connect what we know, what we have, and express that how the best result would be when you offer all the results to Krishna. That's how the karma is explained.
Mm-hmm.
Then what is it like, you know, that direct thing which is also make it so glorious? That is the tenth canto, I mean.
Yes, that's the tenth canto.
After that, then you have inspiration to go back and look each and everything, how to connect it back.
Yes, and then how to improve it, how to develop it, so you can always be Krishna conscious. So you're not dependent upon the karma. You're independent from that. But at the same time, is because that presentation of jnana, because both of them, they're just presenting the devotional element. So they're all bhakti. But they're bringing out that then one can retire from activities that may have been based on varnashram and religious principles like that, and just be engaged in direct activities of devotional service. And still be able to maintain, you know, and if you're on the platform of just relishing the tenth canto, then the knowledge of the other cantos are already accomplished by that relishment, right? But until one gets to that platform, then these others give that support, and if you're describing it to others, then they give how you can connect it.
Yes. Okay. That's the reason why 11th and 12th cantos are quoted more, because they help us to discern what we can use and what need not be.
Yes, yes. Because the point is we're only interested in sad dharma. Right? You basically, you're especially the first cantos, you're taking what's dharma and showing how to connect it to the Lord and how great personalities have become perfect by that. Then you see that the next three cantos are explaining how to appreciate that within that dharma, that connection, the only thing that's actually worthwhile is the aspect of its connection to the Lord. It's not the thing itself. Right? Because the religious principle becomes glorious because of its connection to the Lord. So what makes it sad-dharma? So the other one is explaining sad-dharma, but it's more about how the dharma is connected to sat. That is showing that, you know, it's the sat that makes it work, not the dharma. Right? And then the 11th, 12th is like how to find sat. Because you already know how to engage it and how to do those things. You know, so that's why they don't give that kind of detail there. So sometimes you see it come up, well, what about, you know, but it's already been described before. Okay. This is because in the Bhagavatam there are two types of rasa, though both are filled with affection for the Lord. That which is useful for leading up to the topmost taste, and that which is fully developed in taste for the Lord. Thus it is said in the 12th canto. O mighty Parikit, I have related to you the narrations of all these great kings, who spread their fame throughout the world and then departed. My real purpose was to teach transcendental knowledge and renunciation. Stories of kings lend power and opulence to these narrations, but in themselves do not constitute the ultimate aspect of knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.3.14. The person who desires pure devotional service to Lord Krishna should hear the narrations of Lord Uttama Shloka's glorious qualities, the constant chanting of which destroys everything inauspicious. The devotee should engage in such listening in regular daily assemblies and should continue his hearing throughout the day. From Srimad Bhagavatam, 12.3.15. This is what I mean. Here's that kind, put it at the end. Okay. Then the only problem, it looks like it's 15 to the 8th. Right. Okay, footnote 8. Verse 14 illustrates the first type of rasa, which is useful for leading up to the topmost taste. And verse 15 illustrates the second type, that which is fully developed. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, there's the taste that one's getting in cultivating Krishna consciousness, then there's the taste one gets from Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? In other words, one is the process of advancing, but you're taking everything, connecting it to the Lord and everything like that. The other is just directly that relishing of what's directly connected to the Lord. So the point is they're both, you can say, non-different, but different. It's a natural development. If you cultivate the one, it will lead to the other. But it's also good to know that that other is there. So you don't stop along the way or something, get distracted, you know. As you're driving, then you pull into one petrol station, they have a very nice arrangement there, and you think, this is nice, you can stay here. You know, you completely forget that you're traveling, going somewhere, yes.
Maharaj, in Bhagavatam, the stories of kings, except for those, like, you know, where the specific focus is given for great devotees, other kings, the narration, all those are mentioned because ultimately they renounced everything. And the renunciation is one of the main inspiration to...
Yes, yes. Yeah, because you have to, means it all goes anyway. It all has to be given up. Like that. And so then what will be left is Krishna. It means you give up everything, and then you're left with Krishna, who is everything. But as long as you see that everything is not Krishna, then it has to be given up.
Okay. And this is also, I think, from Bhumi Gita, the two verses.
Ah, from Bhumi Gita. Okay.
Imagine in Krishna consciousness, there is taste at every level.
Yes, there's taste at every level. It just gets more and more. So when it's the beginning level, because we're not discerning between the two, then we're getting a taste in Krishna consciousness, but we're still getting a taste from material life, then we don't really discern. And so whichever happens to be strongest at the time will be attracted to. You know, that's why then when you have festivals and all that, then there's a focus on the devotional activities, so then one will tend to focus more there. You know, there's the religious tendency and all that, so you don't mind, you're going, you're fasting, you're just not doing other things and all that, you know, does that make sense? So, yeah. So that's the whole point. So, but then you start to get more of a taste. But at some point you start to discern that the taste you get from Krishna consciousness and the taste you get from whatever has been important to you, you know, in the material world doesn't actually compare. You know, it's like when the kid figures out the sandesh and eating the mud out in the backyard, they don't compare. When they're real little, they whichever one's there, they eat that, you know. They the mom's not there, they eat the mud, mom comes, they eat the sandesh, they couldn't care less. As long as they're eating, you know. The verse, having described that Bhagavatam has the general nature of rasa, then indicates the more particular nature of that rasa with the word amritam. Amrita refers to sweetness or rasa of the Lord's pastimes. In the 12th canto, this speciality of the Bhagavatam is mentioned. Quote, from beginning to end, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations that encourage renunciation of material life, as well as nectarian accounts of Lord Hari's transcendental pastimes, which give ecstasy to the Atmaramas who relish nectar. Srimad Bhagavatam 12, 13, 11. Right? Because how do you relish the transcendental if one is holding on to the mundane taste? So that's why that renunciation has a value, why it's important. But as mentioned in that first verse, that it's but in themselves do not constitute the ultimate aspect of knowledge. Right? It's that to teach transcendental knowledge, that's the real point. And transcendental renunciation. Transcendental renunciation means you're absorbed in Krishna, so you're not absorbed in Maya. That's the whole idea. You're giving that up. So that's the whole point of renunciation, is you're giving up the mundane taste for the spiritual taste. Right? Now, since we had a tendency to be on that secondary platform, an external platform, so if we're not renounced with the body or you know, body and senses and that, we tend not to be renounced at all. Does that make sense? So it's because we're being renounced at the body. It's just like, let's say, if we were contemplating renunciation, you know, of any port, you know, something that we're doing, is it really important or not, or is it just, you know, just what I like to do, but it's not actually that important for Krishna consciousness, that kind of contemplation. You know, like going out and doing, you know, donuts in the, the parking lot of Tesco's, you know, after they close or something. Right? So, then there's a good chance that that kind of contemplation will happen more on like a fast day or festival day where you're already manifesting outwardly renunciation. Right? There's more of a tendency. So that's the point, it's there. Because when it's externally there, then we do it. That's why there's these aspects. That's why the religious processes include these external forms of renunciation. Because they're simply trying to get you to give up the attachment to the material world. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just about Krishna. You know? Does that make sense? So it's not about the renunciation itself. It's about giving up the material desire and being absorbed in an attraction to Krishna. That's what we're trying to do. But it's not that they don't have that kind of renunciation in the spiritual world. It's just that only if it's useful for Krishna, because then you can get into renunciation and focus on that and forget about Krishna. Just like we get into the karma and forget about Krishna, we get into the jnana and forget about Krishna. So in the spiritual world, they won't make that difference. So, therefore, devotees won't mind, you know, say they're serving prasad, they're doing all these things, so they're not eating. They're making all these arrangements and all that. And so there is that element of their fasting. But it's for Krishna, so it's just comfortable for them. It's not that Mother Jashoda is standing over on the side over watching, you know, while you know, the others are serving Nanda Baba and Krishna and everybody prasad, and she's kind of looking at the watch, kind of stomach grumbling and kind of tapping her toes and rolling her eyes and so they're just absorbed in Krishna. So that's just, it's where it naturally comes. It's there. It's not that there isn't any. You know, so just as there's karma, there is the jnana, because that's its origin. Its origin is in the spiritual world. But there it's perfectly used just for Krishna. In the material world, then all the devotional activities that are using the body, the knowledge, the skills, the detachment, all these different things that are used in the spiritual world in devotional service, those are written into the Vedic system, into the Vedic religion. So that you're already doing them, you're used to them. Because if you're used to fasting, because if you fast, then it's good for something material. Then so you're accustomed to fasting. So now when you find out that you should, you know, about fasting for Krishna and devotion, then fasting's not a problem for you. Does that make sense? But now you're doing it in the proper understanding. But before, it was being done for a fruitive purpose or for renunciation, right? For liberation. That makes sense. So as long as we hold on to that, then, you know, then it's being done from that aspect, and you're giving that result of that to the Lord. You know, that you're being renounced, you're being detached and all that. But with time, then you're just doing devotional service. You're doing service, therefore you're renounced. So you're doing service, therefore the activity is being performed. That's why it's not called karma or jnana anymore. That's why it says one gives up karma and jnana. We may take it that, oh, there's no external activity or there's no knowledge. You just sit there and you just exist. Right? Does that make sense? But existence is also one of the features of Gyan. So therefore, you know, the Gyan is Shakti. So therefore then, does that mean then there's nothingness? Yeah. So that's the difficulty, is that it's just, it's written in. So the Vedic culture is already the culture of activities of what they do in the spiritual world. So the devotee being inspired to serve with the devotees and serve Krishna, then they're going to do these activities naturally, because these are the natural activities of devotional service. In the beginning, you have to make a distinction, because they're different from what we do, or they may not be different from what we do, but we still have to make a distinction between when they're devotional or not. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's all what he's talking about, this first point. The second point is that there's a taste for hearing and chanting in the association of devotees, so we regularly do that. Yeah? The word sat refers to the Atmaramas. The same meaning is found in other places, such as itam satam brahma sukanu bhutya. He is the source of the Brahman effulgence for jnanis, satam, desiring to merge into that effulgence. Srimad Bhagavatam 10, 12, 11. These Atmaramas are also called Sura in the verse Sat Sura, because they taste only nectar, as the devas do. Furthermore, one should equate the real sweetness of Bhagavatam with Krishna's pastimes, Rasa Lila, as indicated in the following quotation. For a person who is suffering in the fire of countless miseries and who desires to cross the insurmountable ocean of material existence, there is no suitable boat except that of cultivating devotion to the transcendental taste for the narrations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's pastimes. Lila Kata Rasa Nishe Banam. Right? So the rasa is, you know, equals lila. So that, yeah, not rasa lila. Rasa equals lila. So in other words, it's from Krishna's lila. That's where rasa is tasted. Right? Because rasa is the exchange between the Lord and the devotees. Right? So then, hearing about his pastimes, lila kata, that's where you get the rasa. Right? So before you're hearing the pastimes and that, but then you're taking the examples and all that. That's why it's told in that way, why kings are used a lot. Brahmins sometimes, kings mostly. Because then it gives that, what was that, lend power and opulence. You know, because we tend to appreciate that kind of thing. Right? And so then we take that up, but with time we get the taste. Then it's just a matter of relishing that taste. That's the difference. So sadhana means you're making that distinction, you're trying to develop, right? And sadhya means you're tasting. So, as you pointed out, is that the taste is there all along. It's just that it's smaller and it grows, grows, grows till all that's all there is.
Okay? The taste is more in the Bhagavatam and the Veda.
Yes. Yeah, it's in the Bhagavatam than any other aspect of the world. So even the other Itihasas and Puranas, there won't be as much as in the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. So that's why it says, Pibita Bhagavatam Rasa Malayam. It means the whole thing is rasa. Right? And it's eternal. It's unlimited. So we don't have to worry that I'm relishing it, but he's also reading it. Does that mean I'm going to get less relish? You know, like that. Didn't he say that you were supposed to? And then you can relish yourself. Right? You get all the nectar.
You can share.
Yes, unlimited. However, by using the word drava, liquid, juice, or essence, with amrita, the Bhagavatam is described as having the very essence of sweet pastimes. So it's not even just sweet pastimes that are sweet, so that's rasa. It's the essence of them. This should be explained as follows. Though the rasa composed of priti is the best, there is some distinction in this. There are two types of experiencer of that rasa. Those who are taught about rasa, they are ordered to drink the nectar of Bhagavatam. and those who are natural experiencers, being participants in the pastimes of the Lord. Right, so one that were being taught about it and told that you should drink this, not other things.
Yes.
Right? Right, we could make a poster, right? Sukadev Goswami with some Dravya Amrita, the Bhagavatam. Like that.
Coming back.
Huh?
Coming back.
Yeah. You know, yeah, just kind of. Those who are participants in the pastime experience the rasa of the pastimes and realize directly the essence of rasa because they are participating in those very pastimes. Those who are taught about rasa experience rasa only to some degree because of being outside the pastimes. So this some degree is unlimitedly greater than what everyone tastes here. Right? This being so, they should then drink here that essence of rasa, the pastimes filled with the experiences of direct participants. Right? They're tasting it, identifying those experiences with their own realization of rasa. That will have effect because the rasa of Bhagavatam flows like a stream, galitam, from the mouth of Sukadeva, as if he is a direct experiencer. Because he similarly identified with the experiences of the direct participants in the pastime. So he's identifying with those who are in the pastimes, and then his experience of that nectarine river is flowing down from his mouth, and then we can then try to appreciate that.
Yes. Right? I think in Chaitanya Charitamrita, this analogy is given: one who is a drunkard, one who drinks more, then he becomes crazy like a madman. He just dances.
Okay.
So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is like that, in that madness of prema rasa.
Okay, drinking more and more. Yes. Yeah, so they're just drinking the wrong thing. Yes. Instead of the pure, unalloyed nectar of Krishna's holy name, they're drinking the mode of ignorance, rasa, right? Yeah.
So Maharaj, what is the recipe of this?
Ah, it's called Srimad Bhagavatam. Every syllable. That's the point. That's why it says, no skin, no seed. You don't have to do anything. You just have to appreciate. That's all. Right? Because if I give you a mango, then you have to wash it. You know, you have to take off the skin, take off the seed, and then you can eat. Right? But this is, it comes... There's no skin or seed. It's just nectar. That's all it is. So that's the whole point. Yeah? Yes. In this way, the highest state of rasa is devotion to the Lord, is expressed in the words of this verse. This is also stated elsewhere. Srimad Bhagavatam is declared to be the essence of all Vedanta philosophy. One who has felt satisfaction with this nectarian mellow will never be attracted to any other literature. Right? One who has had satisfaction means one's completely satisfied in that, then there's not going to be interest in anything else. To indicate this, the word bhavuka is explained as rasa vishesha bhavana chatura, those skillful at experiencing the most excellent rasa. Footnote 9. This is because the word bhavuka means having a good taste as well as being auspicious. Right? So it's being as well as being auspicious, that means it has to be connected to Krishna. So we may be, how you say, very expert at tasting things that are inauspicious, but you know, it's talking about the ones that are expert at tasting things that are auspicious, right? The most excellent rasa. Those skillful experience the most excellent rasa, which means, you know, Krishna consciousness. In the commentary of Sridhar Swami, such persons are described in the Bhagavatam. My dear Vyas, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down somehow or other, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others, food or workers, etc. Because a person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord, rasa graha, can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.19. Like sometimes, I don't know if you've ever heard, let's say, someone who's not practicing as dynamically as they were practicing at one time, and then they say is that basically we know too much to take part in the material, but not enough to get absorbed. That's what it's talking about. They can't forget. Because that nectar is there, you know. So they're looking at it from knowledge, but actually it's taste. Right? And they have the knowledge that you can't get that taste. So what's the drive there? It's the taste. That there's a taste in Krishna consciousness. You know, so they can't get involved in the material. Right? So they have the knowledge that it doesn't, and they have the experience that it doesn't. So it's not just that of knowledge. It's generally presented that it's the knowledge that's the problem. But it's the taste. So they've tasted Krishna consciousness, so it won't go away. That's why it says that they don't undergo material existence like others. Like that, because they don't get distracted and go away like this and that, completely disappear and think that it's great. They know it's not great. They may get distracted, but they know it's not great.
And this Upadeshapak and the Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati give this story that a person is fed with cow ghee and balam rice.
Balam chow. Yeah.
So when he goes out, he'll not get it anywhere.
Yes. You know balam chal? Balam chal is one kind of rice. It's considered like you have Govinda Bhog. So balam chal is another kind. It's another, I'm not sure, is it a siddha? You don't know. Like that. But it's also like you have basmati rice, Govinda Bhog rice. This balam is also very high grade rice. And so then if you have this balam rice, and that's cooked, and then you put cow ghee on top of that. Having tasted that, you actually can't eat any other rice. You just have to eat that. So that was you know that story? No? So this one man, he had a servant, but how you say, like Napoleon, he would feed him nicely. Right? And so he'd give him balam rice and this and gaur ghee and cow ghee, right? And then whatever, because he's a servant in the house, so he eats what's there. But he did that. And so then after some time, then something came up, I think, with the family or this or that. So he left. And then after some time, a little bit later, he comes back. And he asks why he came back, and he says because of this. You can't give up forget the taste of the balam chow or the gaur ghee. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes that example, is that once one's tasted the nectar of Krishna consciousness, one might go away, but one has to come back because there is no taste anywhere else. You generally see, even if someone really goes out there, after 10 years they're back. Like that. Really extreme, 20. But generally you see they're all hovering around like bees hovering around the honey, right? You know, they're all coming and checking. Because that's where the real taste is. So. Yeah, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. In the previous verse, 112 of the Bhagavatam, the powers of Bhagavatam to capture the Lord in the heart were described. In this verse, the sweetness of Bhagavatam is described. Nigama refers to the Veda, right? So one is that the power of the Bhagavatam, by hearing the Bhagavatam, it captures the mind, it pulls that, it removes one, removes the sinful desire, pulls one out of the cycle of samsara, all these kind of things, places one on the spiritual platform. All these things are showing that. It says then that this verse is showing just the nectar of that taste, right? Nigama refers to the Veda. The Veda is a desire tree because it naturally gives fruit in the form of various purusharthas, human goals, artha, dharma, kama, and moksha, which are desired by those who resort to it. However, because of its nature as a tree, being magnanimous, fulfilling everyone's desires, it also gives the fruit known as the Bhagavatam, since some people desire that. Bhagavatam also means that which belongs to Bhagavan as the proprietor, right? So it's the same tree, right? So the Vedic literatures, it's the same tree. The whole, the literatures, the culture, everything. It's all there to give whatever is that human goals of life. So you practice, so you can take advantage of this tree if you practice human life. That's why I say that when you take up the Vedic religious system and you try to understand, you know, how to elevate yourself, that's the beginning of human life. Now, most people are only interested in Artha, Dharma, Kama, and Moksha. So then the tree gives that. So the Vedic literature is from that. Anything you desire on these four platforms, you can gain by following the Veda. But because there are some who want to go beyond that to the fifth Purushartha, then the Vedic tree gives the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's the whole point. It's just a matter of what taste you want. How far you get. So that doesn't mean that giving Bhagavatam, that the rest of it doesn't mean anything, or because the volume is this, only a few are Bhagavatam. No, the Bhagavatam is the essence of the Veda. That's what the Veda is describing. In other words, all these other Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha are only activities that are supposed to be engaged in connection with Krishna consciousness. But since people are only interested in them in connection with their material desires, then the Veda explains it, and you can take advantage of that. But it does mention that worship of the Supreme Lord is the actual purpose. Therefore, all these desires are meant, I mean, all these activities are meant to be engaged in the Lord's service. You do that, and then it means then you become, that perfects human life. You get Krishna. But because you're performing the activities of the Veda, the aspects of karma and jnana come along with that. Right? It's the secondary result. Like Mother Jashoda cook, she's only trying to please Krishna. It doesn't mean that she doesn't have a pot of cooked rice afterwards. But she's not trying to cook a pot of rice, she's trying to please Krishna. And Krishna's pleased with that pot of rice. That's why she cooks it. So the primary is the devotion to Krishna. The secondary is she has a pot of rice. Right? But because it's done just for Krishna, we don't have to identify the secondary separately. Therefore, we just call it devotional service. Right? When we're dealing with karma yoga, then we have to separate the two because we don't know what is karma, what's yoga. Right? So then we have to show the difference. Right? And then, depending on our position, and those who aren't interested in the yoga at all, just the karma part is there. At least then they're cooking. Then they can start to cook for Krishna. And then it's about pleasing Krishna with the cooking. And so it just naturally progresses. Is that
okay? So now, what type of ice are
the you guys
cooking?
The best. Bhagavatam also means that should belong to Bhagavan as the proprietor. This implies that he alone gives the scripture to his devotees, and thus persons other than them do not have rights to it. So Bhagavatam also means that which belongs to Bhagavan. So the Bhagavatam is given by Krishna, because it belongs to him, to the devotees. That's why then the others only get Artha, Dharma, Kama, and Moksha, because that's all they approach Krishna for. Right? Does that make sense? So that they're approaching the Veda and going for Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, it's called pious. But if we're using the Bhagavatam to get our material desires, then that's not considered as good. Right? Because that's for devotion. Does that make sense? That's why we always have to be very careful between where we're doing something in that connection to Krishna and then we're just doing that. Like we're selling hats for Krishna and then we're not in the temple and we're just selling hats. Right? Yeah.
Means
that they're showing how different personalities have elevated themselves. So it's always going to be giving the essence of the Vedas. But it's that if you're interested in pure devotion, then the Bhagavatam is the book that shows that exactly. The others are inferring to it. The Vedas are inferring that. The Upanishads, they're all inferring that. But someone may or may not catch it. So if someone doesn't want that, they won't see it. They'll just think it's Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. But if one wants that, then that one will see from the Bhagavatam. Then it's appreciated. Gopinath Galitam means that it falls down of its own accord when ripened on the tree, not by force. Thus it is completely full of sweetness. Right? So something that's ripened on the tree that is fully sweet. Like that. Like I mentioned that once I had some raisins that they were dried on the vine itself. So you had the grapes, and the grapes get more, you know, they come to the point they're ripe, you pick them. These, they don't pick them, they leave them. Then they start to get more and more ripe, then they start to dry. So the actual, when they go and harvest, they actually pick raisins off of the vines. Right? And then you get those. So those can only come from someplace that's really hot. You know? So, whatever. So I had some of these, and they were really nice. So when the devotees came, I thought, well, maybe they'd like these. You know? And so they put them in the halava and cooked them in like that. And then I remember, because they would make halava every day. You know, that was breakfast, right? So then standard, right? And so then I remember Hridayananda Maharaj, because Veerakrishna Maharaj had cooked. Right? He was a really good cook. So then Hridayananda Maharaj didn't eat the halava. He just picked the raisins out of the halava. They were so good. Right, so that's the point of it. When it ripens fully on, it's so good, right? You know. So like that, the Bhagavatam means this nectar is ripened on this Vedic tree to its just perfect ripeness, and then it falls of its own accord. Right, you don't have to pick it, because if it means when it's fully ripe, the fruit will fall off the tree. Like that.
We just need to be around.
Yes, we should be there, yeah. Otherwise you come back, the bees will be eating it and everybody else, yeah. Thus, it is completely full of sweetness. Even after falling from a high position of the tree, it does not break, nor does it lose its sweetness. That is because it comes down from the highest position, from Narayana, to the branch of Brahma, then to the lower branch of Narada, then to Vyasa, and finally to the mouth of Sukha. Thus, without being injured, it is endowed with liquid sweetness like honey. So it comes down. In other words, the parampara. So that's the point. If Krishna's pastimes, then his every quality is so nectar that you can discuss these technical points in this poetic nectarian form. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So they always do that.
Generally, these fruit-bearing trees, they are like having very thick all the leaves. They help also in not falling directly from the top,
as
they're breaking.
Yeah.
Well, mango tree has gone.
Yeah, but still, if it's that ripe, yeah, and it falls from the top, because they're going to be where the sun is, so they have to be, they'll always be on the outside of the tree. They won't be inside.
Yeah.
So that means the bigger the tree, then the higher it is. So that's it. Yeah. So, yeah. You need the parampara. Yeah. Yeah. The parrot, Sukha, has even made an opening in the fruit with its beak for bringing out the sweetness. Moreover, having been tasted by him, that fruit becomes even sweeter. Moreover, it remains unbroken, coming down step by step from the branch of Sutta and others. What is implied here is that without the Guru Parampara, one cannot drink Bhagavatam in its unbroken form just by trying to taste it through the use of one's limited intelligence. So that's the thing, is even he's tasted it, but still you get the complete fruit. Even others in the line have tasted it. It's not that you end up with some little scrap or something like that, or, you know. It's still complete. That's the thing, because Krishna is unlimited. So even how much you means that's the mean Om Purnamadav. You take one away, he's still one. You add one, he's one. Right? Yeah.
You can say that by reading, discussing, studying Bhagavatam, it's like only Mahapushana from a Guru Parampara.
Yeah, what are you getting? So you're getting the remnants of the Acharyas. Yeah. 1.2.227. In a similar way, it is said in the second canto, O saintly king, I was certainly situated perfectly in transcendence. Yet I was still attracted by the delineation of the pastimes of the Lord, who is described by enlightened verses, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.19, Srila Prabhupada. In Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, first chapter, verse 9, Sukadeva Goswami admits that although he was very much attracted by the impersonal Brahman, when he heard the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from the mouth of his father, Vyasadeva, he became more attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam. The idea is that Vyasadeva was also a self-realized soul, and his mature contribution of transcendental knowledge was delivered directly to Sukadeva Goswami in the manner indicated. Right, so it's coming down the parampara. Vyasadeva himself gave it directly to his son, and this way then he could see the difference in the taste between the transcendental taste and the spiritual taste. No, because it's coming down from Krishna, Narada, down to Brahma. Right? So from Narayan to Brahma, Brahma to Narad, Narad to Vyas. Right? So it means even though he's very close to our line, like for us, to get up to the present, you know, we have 33 in the main line of the Prabhupada. But let's say in other sampradayas and that, they have like 50, 60. Because they don't have that, you know, between Narad Muni and Vyas, they have a lot of people in between them. Does that make sense? So however they are getting, it's coming down and much more. And then from Vyas to Madhva. So that means you're going from 5,000 to just, you know, 700 ago. So that way then we have a very kind of direct connection. But it doesn't matter how many people are there. If it's more or less, it has the same effect. And then if we look at it, then if we take Lord Chaitanya, because it's instructions from him, then it's coming down from him to Rupa, to Jiva, to like this, and then it's also very close. So you don't have to worry that there's no time and space when it comes to this. There's no loss. That's why he's saying, even it's handed down, it's unbroken. It remains unbroken, coming down step by step.
When Sukadeva spoke with the sage,
yes.
Yasadeva was listening.
Yes, he was also listening.
Yes.
Why not? It's a good story. So he was listening, but the point is he spoke to Sukadeva.
Yes.
And now Sukadeva is now then speaking.
Yes.
And then also then Sutta is speaking it.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then Vyasa is documenting that recitation. You know, it's just like, let's say you have so many forms of the book, and so then you choose which one you want to publish. So whichever one's the best according to your criteria, and you take that. So then from that he's taken Sutta Goswami, because Suttas includes the whole of Sukadeva's. Right? Does that make sense? And Sukadeva is speaking then what Vyasadeva told him. Now Vyasadeva may have extracted him over a much longer time or things like that. Remember, he wasn't born until he was 16.
Yes.
So that means Vyasadeva has been talking all this stuff for a long time. But he condensed all that into 7 days. And then Sutta then explaining that so that it could be appreciated by others, then that for us then becomes very nice. Srila Jiva Goswami. Nirguna becomes nairgunya, indicating self-interest. He refers to absorption in the impersonal Brahman. Right? Because being absorbed in Brahman, that's a personal interest. Because Krishna is Brahman. And that's just existence. So that's why it's beyond that position of existence. So one may say, but what about that? But that's why it said before, alaya, it includes that. So that feeling of eternality that is there in the Brahman, that's already there in Krishna consciousness, in the name, in Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Does that make sense? Because we're used to looking for that, right? We're looking for that particular taste, you know, that we may get immediately, but that's the senses, and then the mind likes that, so that would be very strong. It'll be a strong impression. But now, what about those things that we're noticing the eternal element of it? We don't identify it that way. Right? Does that make sense? You like something, or especially so you're missing something, then you can see that eternal aspect. Does that make sense? So that gives a very strong impression. Right? You know, so, you know, it's like, let's say you have good friends, right? So in the modern, what's the best position that you can call this friendship, right? We're not talking like post World War I, like a fellowship or something. Hmm? What do you call you? That's BF. So then, no. There's another letter there. No.
Oh, best friends forever.
Yes, BFF. You have to have best friends forever because it's so nice. They're experiencing at that moment when they're saying that they're feeling that eternal element. So that taste is what because you think no, it can be, because you experience it. It's forever, but it's not because it's material. So that eternal experience is there in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? No. Sorry?
Yes.
No. Okay, so it already includes that. That's why it's saying, all I am. It's already got that. It's got the taste, we're looking material taste. The spiritual is unlimited. And it includes all the means it's unlimited, so all I am. But it's also, it includes that internal aspect of that other aspect of the taste, all I am. So whatever taste is there in karma and jnana, you know, of the taste itself and that eternality and the taste of that eternality, that's already in bhakti. And of that, then Bhagavatam gives the best presentation. Right? You see? Because this is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, but it's just showing that ocean of nectar that is there in Bhagavatam. What's being experienced there. So, self-interest means that you're absorbed in the impersonal Brahman. So giving that up, then you can taste the eternal. The actual eternal. Because here it's self-interested, so how much can you taste? If you're connected with Krishna, then there's no limit. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. You are the famous Sukadev. Being fixed in realization of Brahman from birth, you left the house and wandered about. You could not even learn anything from your father. Why is it that you speak now? This verse answers, though fixed in Brahman, my heart was attracted by the pastimes of the Lord. I am the proof that the pastimes of the Lord are sweeter than the realization of Brahman. Right? So whatever taste is there in Brahman, it's they're sharing. Oh, maybe. If you go over there and pick things up, it's going to be Tulsi. That one probably is also. Okay, so he's proof. He's heard from his father that before he was born, because he was so convinced and had that taste that therefore he took birth and then ran off immediately. You know, so the question is how that? It says no, because he's already heard from before. It's like Astavakra. He learned all his knowledge in the womb. And then when he corrected his father on a point that he made that wasn't correct, and it was inconsistent with previous teachings, his father got upset. So, yeah. In other words, the babies hear all kinds of stuff. Don't think, oh, they don't hear anything. They hear it all. Because remember, they're speaking very nicely and everything. It's only after they got born then they act like they don't know anything. Huh? Yeah. Yeah. Yes. He heard that whole... In other words, Narad Muni is his guru, but we don't see him meeting Narad Muni after he's born. Because he's heard all that noise. Very good point. Right? So Sukadev Goswami, Prahlad Maharaj, and they all heard while they were in the womb. Right? That's why there's a tradition of from the 7th month to then sit and read Bhagavatam. It worked for Sukadev. So. Right? Why not? 1:2:28. Association with like-minded, affectionate devotees, from verse 91, illustrated in the first canto. The value of a moment's association with the devotee of the Lord cannot be compared even to the attainment of heavenly planets or liberation from matter. What then to speak of worldly benedictions in the form of material prosperity, which are meant for those who are destined to die? Srimad Bhagavatam 1.18.3. So poetically they can be so blunt, right? That's the meaning of sweet speech. Like that. Yeah. Heavenly plan is liberation, because you'll consider that a long time, right? Because liberation you're considered to be, you know, deathless, like that, and going to the heavenly planets, they call themselves Amara, even though they may not be. You know, the Hell's Angels call themselves Angels. They may not be. You know, it just, you know, people have to have a name, right? And so what to speak of worldly benedictions, where this is known as the planet of death. This is Martya Loka, right? Because above this and below this, they live for a longer period. They also die, but it's just longer than here. But here, it's not so long. So then, yeah, what's the value? Srila Prabhupada, associating with advanced devotees. The importance of discussing Srimad Bhagavatam in the society of pure devotees was explained by Shaunaka Muni during the meeting at Naimisharanya, in the presence of Suta Goswami. Suta Goswami confirmed that if someone is fortunate enough to associate with a pure devotee of the Lord, even for a moment, that particular moment is so valuable that even those pious activities which promote one to the heavenly planets or give liberation from material miseries cannot compare to it. And so those that give temporary benefits while associating with the devotees, that's why it says the society of pure devotees. That's what the society is for. Lord Chaitanya gave Rupa Goswami a society of pure devotees. He gave that as the Vishva Vaishnava Rajya Sabha, as the society of pure devotees. That's come down and then given to us by Srila Prabhupada. Right? So it's a society of pure devotees. So that, even for a moment, is so valuable, even those pious activities which can promote one to the heavenly planets or give liberation from material miseries cannot compare, because those are both temporary. In other words, those who are attached to Srimad Bhagavatam do not care for any kind of benefit derived from elevation to the higher planetary kingdoms, or for the liberation which is conceived of by the impersonalists. As such, the association of pure devotees is so transcendentally valuable that no kind of material happiness can compare to it. Like, nothing can. We may think that it does, but actually that's just because of our jaundiced taste. We don't notice the sweetness of the actual sugar. We think it's bitter.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.